your farm, and your future matter to us. Welcome to Dairy Stream, a podcast focusing on opportunities and challenges impacting the future of dairy. This podcast is brought to you by the Dairy Business Association and Edge Dairy Farmer Cooperative, sister organizations fighting for sensible dairy policy in Wisconsin and Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Joanna Guza. Recent research shines a light on the trust voters place in farmers and ranchers as credible sources of information regarding policies that affect our food supply. This trust is valuable, and as agriculture continues to innovate, it becomes even more important. Today, we are going to identify situations that happen globally and here in the U.S. when policy passed that negatively impacted agriculture. And then in part two, we will identify ways that we can better connect to voters. Our guest today is Joel Lefwich. He is the Chief Strategy Officer at Kansas Farm Bureau and has nearly 20 years of experience in public and private sector with food and agriculture policy. Joel will be speaking at the Animal Agriculture Alliance Stakeholder Summit on May 8th through the 9th in Kansas City, Missouri. It is a one-of-a-kind conference attended by a diverse group of decision makers, including representatives from farms, ranches, allied industries, food processors, restaurants, grocery stores, legislatures, universities, government agencies, media, and hopefully you. You can find a link to learn more and register in the description. Well, Joel, to get started, if you could just paint the reality of what has happened globally and the struggles agriculture is facing due to bans and regulations.
I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you today and to join your podcast. Thank you, Joanna. I'm happy to talk a little bit about that farmer trust and how it impacts public policy and where we've seen public policy really impact that food supply. A great way to start the conversation about what's happening globally, because we're seeing what farmers and ranchers are facing in the EU, in India, Sri Lanka, in a couple of years past, where policy positions that were taken by the EU or specific countries have now led to a crisis, have led to protests by farmers. I saw some video last week of tractors being pulled up into town and spraying the streets and spraying police officials in protest and trying to get into a different UN meeting. But what we're seeing there is the result of decisions by governments that have been made, you know, in recent years based off of public perception about agriculture being one way or activists pushing elected officials, pushing decision makers to make policy decisions about food production and agriculture production that's not necessarily based on science. And so now we're seeing the impact of that. We're seeing, you know, the EU have to walk back policy positions that they took around fertilizer, how they took around organic farming and mandating what farmers can do because the supply chain has been impacted. You know, it's not just the farmer and rancher's bottom line that is impacted by those policy decisions, but it's the entire food supply chain that's impacted by them. And you know, I'm reminded of comments made by our own U.S. public officials, whether it's Senator Roberts, who I used to work for, or Senator Grassley, who have often talked about global instability occurs when you start messing around with the food supply chain. When, you know, Chuck Grassley used to say, you know, we're only three meals away from a revolution. And we're seeing that take place in the EU. We saw it take place in Sri Lanka. And you know, there is certainly concern that policy positions that were taken by those governments are now finding their ways into the public discourse here in the United States.
So before we cover the United States, Joel, I'm hoping you can give me that high level quick example. You mentioned Sri Lanka in the EU. Let's address the farmer that goes, whoa, I didn't know this was going on. Can you explain what has happened?
Yeah, the EU's farm to fork, you know, policy positions that were adopted, I think maybe 2 years ago or 3 years ago now, or what were 2024, maybe it was 4 years ago. It's all running together, you know, focused on climate change and the perception that agriculture production has an inordinate amount of negative impact on climate change, which just isn't true. It's you know, that's rhetoric that is pushed by some anti-production agricultural organizations that really has infiltrated the minds of decision makers. And so, you know, the EU put policies in place to really curb the use of fertilizer, you know, to really get back at, you know, the synthetic fertilizer use, pushing production to more organic production. And I have nothing against organic production. I think it's certainly a valuable part of our food system and a farmer's business plan, you know, if they can make that work. But having national, or in that case, international mandates that cut the farmer's ability to make a profit or even break even in most cases, greatly impacts the amount of food in the supply chain, greatly impacts the amount of farmers who are producing our food and fiber, but also is hitting consumers in the marketplace as well. And so those policies that were put in place under the umbrella of a more sustainable agriculture production mandate is what's yielding the results that we're facing or that we're seeing now, with farmers' inability to meet market demand, with inability to meet economic demand on their own operations, taking action really against their government. Sri Lanka was, you know, a number of years ago as well, really kind of at the beginning of 2019 and in 2020, they put in place a mandate that really cut the use of all synthetic fertilizer in their fields. They saw dramatic impacts in their tea production, dramatic impacts in their rice production. They went from being self-sufficient in rice to having to import food as well. And so you saw just dramatic reaction from farmers. They saw poverty levels spike as farmers went from kind of middle income households to poverty level income households as well. And so that was the result. Sri Lanka's government had to move back, but a lot of the damage was done. You know, when you go for 2 or 3 years without having the ability to produce enough food for your communities, produce enough food for your country, you're going to see that economic instability and political unrest.
Right. And hopefully we can be learning from these experiences. That's why we're covering this topic on Dairy Stream. Now let's specifically talk about the United States. Has there been any regulations that have impacted agriculture negatively?
You know, certainly yes. The scale is what's going to be determined, and I would suppose the eye of the beholder there as well. You know, we've been able to avoid a lot of those massive mandates, nationwide mandates imposed by the federal government, but we're starting to see certain policies advocated for or adopted that, again, aren't based off of sound science. They're based off of, you know, feel, or based off of perception, and maybe don't have the focus of the farmer or rancher in mind. So a couple of examples, and several of these are now at the state and local kind of ballot initiative level, where we've seen, you know, fights in the past around cage-free egg production. Prop 12 in California, or Question 3 in the Northeast is another example around gestation crates for pork or eggs. And we're seeing the impact that those positions are going to take on our on the industry moving forward. Again, you know, those are policy positions or ballot initiatives that were passed, pushed by advocates, kind of in the maybe anti-production agriculture point of view, that has an impact all across the industry. Outside of government, you'll also see, many of your listeners, I'm sure, are aware of this as well, different stakeholders impacting publicly traded organizations, moving shareholder provisions around, whether that's tracking carbon production and ensuring that company is carbon neutral by X number of date, and thinking about what that means for their supply chain. We're starting to see those policies pop up, not just in the government, arena, but also in corporate shareholder discussions and decisions as well.
Hindsight's 2020. Is there anything that, you know, we or other countries could have done differently, seeing these items come down? And I know in part two we're going to kind of dive into some of the strategy, but curious your perspective on things that have already happened. I mean, you brought up Prop 12, talking about Sri Lanka. Is there anything we could have done, hindsight, to prevent it?
Probably a lot. I'm sure there's really smart people out there who have great ideas on what we could have done differently. from my perspective, you know, I'm looking forward to the conversation here in part two about what we do going forward. But, you know, I think we have to look at the ways that we engage these conversations, depending on the jurisdiction of where the decision is made, whether it's a state ballot initiative or whether now it's a county ballot initiative, all the way up to the federal government here in the United States. We have to look at ways that we engage the public in different ways, and particularly how we engage voters. Are we providing them the right information about the impacts of a particular policy proposal? Are we encouraging voters to hold their candidates and elected officials accountable to how they feel about the food system? What are their positions that they take that impact the affordability and the availability of our food system? And so encouraging, I think, voters in a targeted way to think about their food system and how they make voting decisions is something that we need to do a better job of. And I don't think we did a real great job of it, frankly, in the Prop 12 debate, a few years ago.
And do we need to be strategic about which voters we engage in? I mean, you gave a few examples right there. You know, I think, for example, do we target that voter that's managing the grocery store, or are we targeting that shopper that's in the grocery store?
Yeah, and this is where it comes down to a difference between general kind of public education work or consumer work around the importance of our food system or the different values that are great about what makes milk so wholesome and why that's a good product for you to consume versus a ballot initiative at a state or county level where we need to have a targeted approach to folks who are registered voters. Oftentimes, we do a lot of work to promote the general well-being and good of our industry in a broad fashion. You can equate that to trying to boil the ocean. And I think we struggle with targeted approaches in a meaningful way, run more like a campaign, an election campaign, than we do with kind of just general PR and our sales marketing teams, which have very different and important jobs to do. We tend to negate engaging in direct campaign action around issues.
This question kind of stemmed. I've interviewed a lot of people from the Animal Agriculture Alliance team. Recently, when I talked to them in November, one thing we talked about is how activists are going straight to kind of the decision maker. So that brand, that policy maker, is that where we need to be going instead of just the voter, that we need to be going to that voter that has a lot more skin in the game or power when it comes to making those decisions?
Yeah, has a big checkbook and buys the products that our members produce every day, right?
Right.
Like that's an important view. Like that, those are important folks to influence. I think, you know, this is not an either or situation that we're in. When we look at what the future holds, and I know you've had some good folks on your program that have talked about the future of food and what the future of the farmer looks like, and Aimpoint's done some really cool research there too. We've got to engage at all levels, which takes different voices talking to different people. Who are the most effective voices to advocate? You know, so who is it that we can target to be that key voice to influence the boardroom of those companies making those decisions? It is an all of the above approach.
When we talked to Aimpoint, Scott made the comment about farmers have that responsibility of sharing that message. And this kind of leads into our last question as before we go into the break. Can you share why the farmers are the most trusted voice?
Whether it's Gallup poll, and they've got some recent polling that I like that shows farmers, and this shows restaurants up there too, which I think is really cool to see, you know, the food system being at the top of the list. And then a whole bunch of other industries, you know, down the line on that list. I don't know that there's one reason that we can say why people who participate in these polls and these surveys continuously say that farmers and ranchers rank at the top. But what we do know is that those attributes of hard work, genuine concern for their neighbors produce. I mean, the farmers and ranchers have made the decision, a conscious decision, to spend their lives in a field of work that has, you know, very tight margins, is dependent upon the weather, and you're really at kind of the mercy of others, whether it's consumers or manufacturers or purchasers. And I think that resonates with people. We all eat, we love to eat, and we have our favorite foods. And so you like to think about the people who are raising those foods, who are growing that food, raising that livestock, and that eventually ends up on your plate. We want to think of them in a good light. And frankly, the U.S. farmer and rancher gives them a lot of reasons to think positively. There have been some good public messaging campaigns about sustainability and how our production method and models here in the United States are sustainable. Certainly compared to other countries. And so I think that's kind of all of those different things wrap up into the reason of why survey goers continue to rank farming and ranching at number one.
Our guest has been Joel Lefwich. He's the Chief Strategy Officer at Kansas Farm Bureau, and he will be speaking at the Animal Agriculture Alliance Stakeholder Summit on May 8th through the 9th in Kansas City, Missouri. Next, we will gain insight on how we communicate and engage the voter. But first, let's hear more about the Animal Agriculture Alliance Stakeholder Summit.
Dozens of speakers, hundreds of perspectives, countless ideas, and that's just at the starting line of the Animal Agriculture Alliance's 2024 Stakeholder Summit. It's going to take a team to drive our future forward. It's going to take you running alongside fellow stakeholders from across the food chain who know that putting in the work is the only way to transform today's challenges into tomorrow's solutions. Are you ready? Then take your spot at the 2024 Summit. Join us in Kansas City, Missouri on May 8th and 9th. Registration is available through May 1st at animalagalliance.org/initiatives/stakeholders-summit.
Dairy Stream is brought to you by the Dairy Business Association and Edge Dairy Farmer Cooperative. In this part, we will discuss the strategy to communicate with voters. Now, to kick off our conversation in the second part, Joel, can you share how do we better engage people on agricultural topics?
I think one of the things that we need to do is understand the point of view of a voter, understand the jurisdiction of the election that we're talking about. You know, are we working in a ballot initiative at state level or county level, or is it about a federal campaign, you know, U.S. congressperson or senator, you know, whatever the election jurisdiction is, but really get to what matters to that voter. You know, there's not many farmers and ranchers in the United States. You know, we're just under 2 million, I think was the latest, you know, census poll by USDA, you know, and how many hundred of million voters are we going to have in this election? So we can't rely on just the vote of the farmer to win elections. You got to have 50% plus one. And you know, any good campaign consultant will tell you that your goal should really be 53 to 54% to give yourselves a little bit of cushion. So when we can't rely on just the farmers and ranchers who are doing this every day to carry our water and vote on what agriculture should do, we have to find a way to tap into the values that are important to voters. We consistently hear that, you know, our food system is affordable, it's safe, and, you know, it's available. One of the things that I think is interesting coming out of COVID, we didn't have a failure of the food system like some folks may want you to believe. We had blips, we had glitches. An example I like to say is, you know, we were living in Wichita during the beginning and kind of the height of COVID. And we had a Target, we had a Walmart, we had a Dillon's all within like a half mile of us. We were pretty fortunate that the opposite of a food desert, we lived in the middle of that in Wichita. But I had to go like at a specific time during the week to get apple juice, because once that apple juice was delivered at the grocery store, you know, you couldn't find it the next day. I mean, there was people looking for it. That was the first bit of disruption in our food system. It wasn't a major one, but it was the first time that a lot of consumers here in the United States experienced how intricate our food system is, and that how one little policy change or one little economic change could really impact the availability of our food. And so now we've come out of COVID. You know, we don't have those blips in the distribution chain, but in a lot of people's minds, they still have the memory of that. So I think we've got a really good opportunity here for the farmer and the rancher and the agriculture community to talk to consumers in a way that focuses in on what they've experienced in the last couple of years and how policies can impact the ability to make sure when they go to the grocery store, they don't experience that. inflation is certainly top of mind when it comes to voters. And when you look at different polling organizations as they're trying to get into the mind of the voter coming into 2024, inflation in the economy ranks number one. But a lot of voters are they're struggling to make the connection when they fill out those surveys between inflation and food policy. And we have to explain that connection between what food policy can do to impact the price of food and the availability of food. And so we need to be better at engaging folks on that level about what's important to them, and that's the affordability and availability of food.
And when we talk about engaging, what platform or avenue do we use to engage the voter?
As someone who works for a membership organization, I like to say how well membership organizations do and as far as representing our members and helping spread the word about potential policies or elections that may impact our members in the growing community. As an industry at large, I don't think we do a very good job of talking directly to voters. We don't. You know, I think we've got really good media teams. We've got good press teams, good communications teams that are out there. And frankly, and this might be a little controversial, but if I hear one more person say, we just need to tell our story, I think I might roll my eyes back. I'll keep the reaction at that. It's not just telling our story. We have to be targeted in the story that we tell and making sure that we're talking about shared values. We can't just preach to people about how awesome agriculture is. We have to align our awesomeness of what we do with what's important to them. And we know that food price and availability and safety is important to them. We have to change what we say to not just talk about the whatever attribute we're wanting to talk about or the importance of dicamba or the importance of particular production method. We have to talk about it in terms of food price, food availability, and food safety if we're going to really impact voters. And we have to be targeted. Again, you know, we can't employ this boil the ocean strategy and just put some ads out on Facebook or Google or whatever it wants to be. We have to be targeted in who we're going after. Registered voters in key districts and key states where we know there's going to be tough votes.
So I want you to put your PR hat on. Is that starting a Facebook page? Is that connecting with your local media? Is it being more involved in your membership organization? If you were to say a specific platform that's going to help, you know, share those values. I mean, I think about one thing from my perspective, talking about being a mom and a farmer, that's where I can make that connection with someone. So do I do that on social media? Do I ask the local media to interview me? How do we share that message and when it comes to those platforms?
It's a great question. And there's multiple ways that we need to do it from different voices. I mean, we certainly have a role as a membership organization to work directly with media. And we do some great work, you know, at the Kansas Farm Bureau to train particular spokespeople and who are our members and have hosted media and news outlets out on their operations to show folks, you know, kind of pull the veil back and bring them out on the farm and show them what it means to them from their unique perspective, whether it's as a parent or whether it's as a small business owner. Is there small business owners who a lot of folks are doing direct to consumer now from their farms as well? So you have that perspective to engage also. I do want to say that the platform to engage, I think, is multifaceted. Our board started some work to create a separate entity called U.S. Ag Partnership Fund, USAPS. And what that organization does is it brings national resources of finances or polling or whatever is needed and partners with state agriculture interests to help influence and impact local elections, whether that's at a county level or state level or whatever it might be needed in that state. So we need to have this partnership where we use the voice of the farmer or rancher at a local level to impact national policy, because all voters are local. We talk, you know, all politics is local. All voters are local. There's no one who votes from a particular state on a national ballot. They're voting on a local ballot, and we need local voices to impact and influence those voters, because that's who they trust. You know, a voter in California is not going to trust a farmer in Kansas. The voter in California wants to hear from a farmer, a rancher in California, and you know, take that across any location across the United States. That's what we need to engage in addition to all of the great things that we're doing already. We need to bring additional tools to the table, and that's one way that we're trying to do that.
And what topics should agriculture be sharing about that with consumers that are interested and learning more? I mean, you talked about food security and inflation and, you know, sharing that message with them. You know, what are some topics we need to be covering?
Definitely that. I mean, if you get to, again, what is the number one thing that voter, or the highest ranking thing that voters are making their decisions on in this coming election, and that's the economy. And so how is it, how does agriculture and our current food system impact the economy, impact inflation? Well, anything that we do, anything that, any policy that's put in place that makes the cost of production increase or limits supply, we have to relate that back to the voter in something that's important to them. You know, Prop 12 is a great example of where I don't think we did a good job. And kudos to all of our friends who fought hard, certainly fought in the court system to explain the potential impact of Proposition 12. But when you go back and you look at the fight in California, the website with the highest amount of traffic against Prop 12 was an animal rights organization. You had two animal rights organizations duking it out. You saw the media coverage, HSUS versus PETA. And what you didn't hear in that conversation or see was a lot of the production agriculture point of view saying that this will impact the price of pork X, Y, and Z. We said it, but I don't think we engaged as much directly influencing the voter on that fact, because we were watching these two animal activist organizations duke it out, and then we thought we would win it in court. You know, we've got to change the mindset of just relying on law and precedent to win in the day, because now we've got a Supreme Court decision that went the other way.
Right. And I think there's a lot we can learn from Prop 12. Curious from your insight, kind of going a little off script here, but
sure.
Now Prop 12 happened. What should the egg community do differently in terms of now educating DC and national, you know, policy when it comes to Prop 12? I mean, I think this is a really big warning sign to other commodity groups that a large population can justify how food is grown and raised. Now, it's passed once. Could it happen again? And, you know, how can we make sure that that doesn't happen again?
Absolutely. And we're seeing it happen. We're seeing these attempts. There's a ballot initiative in the city and county of Denver to shut down all slaughterhouses, is the term that they use in the ballot initiative. So we're going to keep using that same term, to shut down all slaughterhouses in that city and county. I mean, that's a county level initiative. And we're going to see that, you know, Sonoma County, similar type of ballot initiative out there as well. We have to engage as an agriculture community at those targeted local levels. We cannot just rely on folks in Washington, D.C. to fix it after the fact. And look, I'm very proud of the work that I did with Senator Roberts and the team that we had at the Senate Agriculture Committee and other folks who worked on these issues as well. But, you know, we saw this with biotech labeling that came through in Vermont. Vermont had a law that was going into effect, and we had to fix it at the national level. It was a painful fix. And there's folks in agriculture who didn't like it. You know, there's folks on the other side who were proponents of mandatory disclosure who don't like it either. So that probably means we got something right if we ticked off people on both sides of the issue. But when you rely on Congress, and again, I'm looking at myself as a staffer who helped laws pass, and thankfully I worked for a good boss. But when you rely on Congress to fix the issue, you're not going to get the result that you want. And so we have to start bringing it back to the local level and engaging at the local level. And that also means having folks at the county level, at the state level, talking to candidates before they're even elected about the importance of the food and agriculture system. When a candidate comes through for a town hall meeting, we need folks, not just the farmers and ranchers in the room, we need folks who are consumers asking questions about that candidate's position on the food system. Do you support policies X, Y, and Z that will increase the cost of food? And we're not doing that now. And so we've got some work to do. And I'm hopeful, I'm actually very optimistic that we can utilize all of the infrastructure that the agriculture community has on the ground now, because we've got great infrastructure in place. And when you have great infrastructure and you have a trust level from the American public that you can't buy. And that's what the anti-agriculture groups have to do. They have to buy. They have to create credibility. They have to purchase it somehow or some way. We don't have to purchase that. So we have infrastructure in place. We have the trust of the American voter. We need to just utilize these assets that we have in a more targeted way. Sorry, got a little preachy there, but I'm very optimistic that we can do this in a way that's cost efficient ourselves and very effective.
Right. Farmers are trusted voices and they're the best problem solvers. So combine those two and we can go and make things happen. So how can a farm, or we even have ag businesses that are listening to this podcast, include engaging voters in their business model?
Yeah, I think that's an important question. Including it in your business model. We have to have resources to do this work. And so whether that is, you know, by being a member of a trade association or a membership organization, it's not just about cutting that check. You have to ensure that those voices who are working for you, those organizations that are working for you, are doing so in a targeted way. You know, are they setting aside resources or raising additional resources to do this work? I'm not criticizing the types of advocacy tools we have in place now. We need them all. Mm-hmm. But we have this big hole in how we advocate directly to voters in a targeted way that we as an industry, we just haven't invested in the past. Most other industries have some sort of structure in place or tool in place where we are communicating directly to voters in key states and key jurisdictions. Agriculture, we just haven't developed that yet. Probably because we've been so effective in the past at advocating in DC or advocating in our state capital. And with this high trust factor that we have with the American people, we just haven't had to build this out. Well, now things are changing and we need to develop this tool. So yes, making sure you set aside resources in your business plan to put towards efforts like this, either through a membership organization or a trade organization.
You know, I can hear the farmer in the back of me saying, Joanna, ask, why do I contribute to my checkoff? Which they have to contribute to their checkoff, or I am a part of a membership organization. That is their job. That is my business model. I pay the money, the dues to make you go and talk about it. What would you say to that farmer that kind of has that mindset of the checkoff? This is their job.
Checkoffs are not allowed to do this work. Checkoffs cannot talk about policy. Checkoffs cannot talk about politics. And checkoffs are important. It's just a different type of work. And yes, membership organizations like ours, Kansas Farm Bureau, we do a lot of good work for our members. And I can say Kansas Farm Bureau has put money towards this. So all of you Kansas Farm Bureau members who are out there listening, we got you. We've heard the call and we're putting resources to work in this field, you know, and I would say that's a challenge to other trade associations and membership organizations is to be thinking about this and putting some resources towards it. If you're the farmer and rancher, hold your folks accountable, talk to them about it. And, you know, hopefully they see things in a similar way. I'm not saying, you know, they have to make those decisions based off of their budgets, but this is an area where we cannot afford to ignore. We cannot afford to sit out the fight. We cannot afford to continue to use the same tools that we have been using for the past 30 years and hope that they are effective in today's political climate. We need more tools in the toolbox, so to speak, to continue to win.
Right. If you're complaining about a topic or complaining about your checkoff or your membership organization, talk about it. I feel like most organizations are really receptive. I mean, that's how they run, is through their membership. So if you have a problem, you contact them and hopefully then you can get your voice heard that way. Now, last question, Joel, as we wrap up this episode of Dairy Stream, you know, how do we in agriculture stay engaged on topics and up to date with the latest trends? I mean, especially with social media, things change really quickly. How can farmers be ahead of the game?
Great question. I am not a TikTok user, so I'm not going to advocate here for TikTok. One, we've got to be active. Like, you've got a million things going on in your operations that you're paying attention to every day. And a lot of that is probably just like, you know, risk assessment. What's going to break down today? How do I get this? How do I get that fixed? How do I get that fixed? What's coming in the future as far as, you know, your customers and your clients and your buyers and your suppliers? But we have to take some time to continue to stay up to date on what kind of the other side of the conversation is talking about. And particularly, what are our consumers telling us? What's the general public telling us? If we're starting to see more and more ads towards sustainability, well, let's talk to them at their level. If we know more and more folks are concerned about inflation or concerned about the price of food, then let's talk to them about how we help keep the price of food low. I mean, the United States agriculture system is the best in the world. Like, that's not just you know, self-aggrandizing or whatever the term is here. It's fact. You look at the amount of our disposable income that goes towards food production is lower than anywhere else in the world. There's a reason for that. Let's be proud of it. Let's protect it, not just from the farmer perspective. Let's protect it from the consumer perspective. And so that we have to stay engaged on what consumers are telling us and then meet them where they are in talking about those issues. If we know a consumer is interested in the price of food, we can't just talk about Roundup. We can't just talk about the latest equipment that we purchased. We have to talk to them using their language on issues that are important to them, not necessarily issues that are important to us.
Every voice and every step to share about agriculture matters. We appreciate the work from groups like Farm Bureau, Animal Agriculture Alliance, Dairy Business Association, and Edge Dairy Farmer Cooperative that support their farmer members in moving in a positive direction. Special thanks to Joel for joining us on Dairy Stream today. And you can see Joel in person at the Animal Agriculture Alliance Stakeholder Summit on May 8th through the 9th in Kansas City, Missouri. As always, we appreciate your listenership and hope you will tune in again. I'm your host, Joanna Guza, for Dairy Stream. The Dairy Business Association and Edge Dairy Farmer Cooperative would like to thank you for listening to Dairy Stream. If you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe and rate Dairy Stream. We value your feedback, and if there's something you'd like to hear, email us at podcast@dairyforward.com.